Alan Grant. You look the same.
Oh.
And this place, you.
Welcome to the Three Men in a Retrospective Podcast, Jurassic Park Retrospective Series.
This is how you make dinosaurs?
No. This is how you play God.
Join Garrett.
You command respect. People believe you.
Matt.
Can I get you something and a beer? Or...
And Adam.
Gee, the lack of humility before nature that's being displayed here staggers me.
As they take a tour of one of cinema's most popular franchises.
Dear heavens, I think we're back in business.
Will Matt make more enemies than some out-of-reach dino food?
Our scientists have done things which nobody's ever done before.
Yeah, but your scientists were so preoccupied with whether or not they could, they didn't stop to think if they should.
And where does Adam stand on yet another film series started by the Beard?
Oh, that's discouraging.
Find out the answers to these questions and more on this podcast, 65 Million Years in the Making.
These are aggressive living things that have no idea what century they're in, and they'll defend themselves violently if necessary.
Courtesy of Percolated Media.
Hang on to something!
Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom was released June 22nd, 2018. Budget, I'm just going to go ahead and say it was about $300 million. Box office, goddamn, $1.3 billion. Yes, billion. And this was directed by J.A. Bayona. All right, guys. Well, we mentioned last week, we all had a pretty decent time with Jurassic World. And at that time, Colin Trevorrow was on top of the world. In the time since, in the lead up to this particular film, he had made one of the worst movies ever made. Matt, is that safe to say?
We talk about Rise of Sky? Oh, wait, no, he didn't direct that.
No, he didn't direct that.
Book of Henry, yeah. But it's also one of my favorite bad movies ever made. If I was teaching a class about like bad cinema and how you should study it to learn what not to do, I would use that as one of my textbook examples. It might even be my thesis statement for that matter.
I remember seeing it and man, it is just as bad as its reputation. It is horrid. Adam, have you seen Book of Henry?
Oh God, no. I almost did when I heard that that was the movie that basically got kicked out of Lucasfilm, which is amazing when you have Rian Johnson. But no, I've never gone back to see it.
Well, he was supposed to. Right after Jurassic World, Kathleen Kennedy was like, come on over to Lucasfilm. And he went there and he was going to do Rise of Skywalker. And whether he left because he felt comfortable with Jurassic or the fact that he was kicked out because of Book of Henry is a question still up in the air. Matt, which one do you think it is?
Both.
You think, yeah, I think it's a combination of both as well. I agree. But here he is. He's back. He is only here as a story credit, though. He is here to write the screenplay with his partner yet again and hand it over to the hands of J.A. Bayona. Now, this is a guy who he made The Impossible, which is one of the most depressing disaster movies ever made. And one of Matt's most cryable films, one of his most, one of the movies that just made him bawl like a baby, A Monster Calls. Now, Matt, what were you thinking when you heard that Bayona was attached to this?
Well, that's kind of the only reason I gave any semblance of a fuck. Because I think that The Impossible really showed he could handle big disaster porn. And I say that in a good way, but also A Monster Calls showed that he understood humanity and how to, you know, move people through fantasy. And I also really like The Orphanage.
Yeah.
And there's parts of that movie that I think are really unsettling. And Jurassic Park has always kind of tried to be this mix of, we want to have some scares in there. We want to have characters that people gravitate to. And we want big spectacle. And Bayona checks all of those boxes on his previous work. Certainly much, much more established than Colin Trevorrow was when he got Jurassic World. So that excited me. But when I saw the price tag of $400 million associated with this movie, and it's technically the second most expensive film ever made, only behind Force Awakens, I said, what the fuck are you spending this money on? Now, they're fortunate that these movies just make money hand over fist every time, and they haven't had like a Transformers 5 situation where there's a massive drop-off despite ballooning budgets. I didn't see why they were blowing their load on this, if for no other reason than they could.
Adam, had you heard of J.A. Bayona before this movie had come out?
The only thing, and the name sounded familiar, so I had to go back and take a look, and I was right. He had directed some episodes of Penny Dreadful, and I had seen that series on Showtime. But other than that, you know, I heard of A Monster Calls, and I've heard it was a really good film worth watching emotionally. But other than that, no. So this is, to me, kind of blew me away that, I mean, this is Marvel-ish in the way of you take somebody who doesn't have a whole lot of big screen credit and you're going to give him a dump truck full of money and hope he doesn't fuck it up.
Yeah, if it wasn't for the fact that I was covering the series at our previous home, I don't think I would have gone to see it. I was that let down at the time by Jurassic World. I didn't care. We've seen dinosaurs on the screen. What else could they do? Now, Bayona did have the resume behind him, so that did give me a little bit of hope, much like Matt, but I was not excited for this at all. I did go, though. I went opening weekend, and it was a packed theater, man. People were digging this. Matt, did you see this opening weekend?
No, I waited a bit because I just didn't care. No matter how much Bayona intrigued me as a filmmaker, I waited until a buddy of mine texted me that he made a movie that he described as a haunted house with dinosaurs. And I said, okay, I'll go see it. What he failed to tell me was that's not the whole movie.
No, that's only the last. Yeah, that's only like the last fucking quarter. Adam, did you mention last week that you took the family to this?
I can't remember if it was a family. It's amazing that this thing is 7 years old at this point. Mm-hmm. You know, I know that it was at least Alex and I. It might have been Alex, I, and Madison. I mean, I got a son who absolutely loves freaking dinosaurs, and he loves big monsters, so there was no way we weren't seeing this. We got the Lego set of the mansion at the end of this film.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so right by our Hogwarts castle, we have, for some reason, the mansion from this film and a bunch of dinosaurs. So this was a theater watch. I want to say it was opening weekend. I think it might have been all of us, because I'm trying to think that if I brought the kids, Laura probably came as well. And yeah, from what I remember, absolutely packed freaking house to see this thing. And not a big surprise. I mean, its world was a hit, and I think people kind of wanted to have stuff come back. And I think you could play this one on Chris Pratt even more than you could the last one.
I remember there being Dr. Pepper that was named after Jurassic World. I remember going to 7-Eleven getting a Jurassic World Slurpee. I remember going to Dairy Queen, getting an ice cream that supposedly had dino droppings in it. The fucking marketing behind these films is insane. And I don't care how big the marketing is, though. The reviews for this were not good. Despite that, this thing made over $1 billion. Matt, what is it about dinosaurs that keeps people coming back?
Well, not to use the pun, but they're universal, which is not... I don't say that as a pun on the studio behind this, but people just like dinosaurs. There's intrigue. You associate them with childhood. So I think that touches on people's nostalgia. And Jurassic Park is still, unlike a lot of franchises that get rebooted, it's kind of like Ninja Turtles, where it's always been culturally relevant. Not just with the movies, but, you know, the theme parks, I think, help a lot. It's always in people's minds, and it's cornered the market on dinosaurs in general, outside of more niche things like Turok, and even Disney's dinosaur movie bombed. So they know the secret. They have the Krabby Patty formula, and no one else seems to know how to perfect it.
So we open up with the Universal and Amblin logos as we go underwater at Isla Nublar, and one worker is told to relax as anything in here would be dead by now. And here I was being reminded of the underwater expeditions of Jaws Revenge, guys. Which is
don't you mean Jaws 3D?
No, he goes and searches for shell animals in Jaws Revenge. That's what I thought of. Interesting way to start this. I was not expecting to have a Jurassic Park movie start or Jurassic World movie start underwater.
Well, it's kind of an expectation considering how big the Mosasaurus played into the previous movie. So it's not all that surprising. I actually dig this opening because at the same time, though, it creates a false sense of expectation for me because it's shot in the dark. The dinosaurs are kept in shadow. It's got more of a horror tinge to it that the rest of the movie doesn't necessarily live up to. And I kind of wish the whole movie was like this. Not that it's got an edge and, you know, is a slasher movie, but I like that the dinosaurs feel awe-inspiring and this mercenary team is clearly outmatched, which I appreciate.
I like this opening a lot. Underwater, whenever you start a film with those kind of shots, I'm thinking it's a it's a nice little tip of your hat to Spielberg. And with this being a universal property, it's, I can't help but think that. But I think it's a good way to go back to the world. I think it's pretty damn smart, and not knowing what it was going to be, I think it sets it up fucking really good.
They find the Indominus Rex as they cut some bone and send it to the surface. This one is more geared towards kids, guys, but this opening scene is, like you mentioned, Matt, it's more horror-based. I was expecting more of this.
Yeah, like I said, this is kind of how, what I wanted the whole movie to be, as far as tone and style. But you could say that about basically all of the movies after the first one, and even the first one to a certain degree, where they're made much more for kids.
Yeah, they know their audience. We mentioned way back when we covered Jurassic Park, the original, James Cameron was up for that gig. It's safe to say this would have been a much different series. I don't even know if it would have made it past the first one if Cameron had gotten this. We talked about the fact that dinosaurs are universal. Well, Spielberg found that formula that just keeps people coming back to this.
Well, it would have been aliens with dinosaurs, which I would have loved, but I don't think it would have had the cultural impact that it did, because it would have been a hard R for one thing.
Yep. So they're told to leave as the gates are now being secured. The signal is lost, and I like this shot of the dino behind this guy as it kind of roars in his face. He chases him, and then the guy gets on a ladder leading up to the helicopter, but the dino gets a hold of it, and the guy's happy he's gotten away. Triumphant music is played, and then the good old Mosasaurus pops out of the water and grabs him. Despite all of this, the sample has been secured, and that is your pre-title sequence as we get titles directly lifted from Mordor. I'm like Matt, I'm really digging this opening scene. I love that it's in rain. I love the Mosasaurus coming back. This is fun stuff.
I think it's a good opening. I think it's a thrilling horror type opening. That shot when he's working on, I can't remember if he's opening or closing a gate, it doesn't matter. And then with the lightning strikes, you get a flash of light and you see the T-Rex getting closer and closer. And I mean, it's the Weeping Angels from fucking Doctor Who. Like it's that kind of just scary. That's awesome. And then everything up here till the Mosasaurus showing it up, which I'd forgotten, even though we just were underwater before. This is some of the best that they've done in setting up with thrills and scares and reintroducing our dinos immediately. It's a good open.
I also like that you can see the Mosasaurus behind them.
Yes.
When they're underwater, you see it moving. So it's kind of reminding you, oh yeah, this thing's here. But I'm not going to accuse, I'm going to say a lot of things about this movie. Calling it intelligent is not going to be one of them. But if you recall in the first movie, because this takes place on the same island as Jurassic World, the Mosasaurus is in the middle of the park. How the fuck is it now in the middle of the ocean?
There are so many logic questions I have by the end of this that my head was spinning. I couldn't answer it, and I don't think Colin Trevorrow could either.
It also completely jumps and breaches out of the water, so you might need a gate or a wall that sticks up a little bit. So having an underwater gate doesn't do a lot when you have a fucking Mosasaurus that can jump.
We're hearing from newscasts that there is volcanic action brewing from where the last film took place, and Matt, correct me if I'm wrong, but this was actually in that Jurassic Park novel, wasn't it?
I barely remember, but this is also dumb. You built a theme park on the same grounds as an active volcano.
Yeah, because no matter what, that place was doomed from the start.
Yeah, the difference is there were not going to be any tourists who were incinerated because of dumb luck.
So stupid. I mean, all right. This is as stupid as I built a second park. I mean, this is just, oh, it's on the other side of the island. Oh, okay. I mean, this is contact, right? Oh, you got to build a second spaceship. It's the laziest type of, oh, just because.
We're hearing over $800 million in damages have been paid as a result of the last film. And then we cut.
That's low. Yeah. That's low.
Yeah. Absolutely. And then we cut to good old Ian Malcolm, who pulls for the dinosaurs to be taken out by the volcano. When I heard Jeff Goldblum was here, I was excited. I was happy that he was going to come back. He is here for what, 3 minutes? Maybe total?
3 minutes? When is this hearing taking place?
Yes.
He's got two scenes. Is this after the dinosaurs have escaped the mansion? Is this before? He's wearing the same outfit in both scenes, so it's got to be the same hearing. I'm confused, and Goldblum looks like he would rather be anywhere else. Mm-hmm. He's like, you got me for one day, and that's it. And they partially sold the movie on his return, and that was a cheap move.
I think it makes sense to have him in this role doing this thing. I don't think it's okay that the marketing was kind of based on him narrating the trailers, because it made you think that it was his movie, much like the second Jurassic Park was his movie. So that, I mean, that's what they're telling us. This is it. He doesn't even show back up again in the movie. He's here explaining to Congress or this panel what's going on. I think it's an important scene. I like it. I think it would have been stronger to not even reveal that this was here, because this doesn't sell the movie. But I like it. I think it's an important part of explaining what happens, but spoiling it is just stupid.
Well, they bookend the film with him. He's in the beginning, he's at the end.
The entire speech is on the trailer.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say, is I hate the fact that everything he says here, we heard in the trailer, and that's all you're going to get from him until next week. Despite all this, I do like the quote that he has that I wrote down when he says that change is like death. You don't know what it looks like until we're standing at the gates. I thought that was a pretty nice quote.
And I feel like that was ad-libbed, because I don't think Trevorrow was smart enough to come up with something that clever.
No. Speaking of not clever, we cut to the very first shot of Claire, who opens the film with the shot of the shoes on her feet. Just to outline, oh yeah, we know that everybody made fun of her shoes last time. We're just going to shoot these shoes because she's not going to be in high heels this entire time. Fuck off with this shit.
I love that they did this. This kind of self-awareness, I think, is fucking great.
She's off giving coffee as she picks up a call from a congresswoman, as Zia and Franklin exchange dialogue that to me ensured that there would be a romance. Nope.
Ah, the two most hated characters I've ever... Oh my God, do I hate these two so much.
Here's what I'll say about these two. And you know what? When I initially reviewed this, I felt the same exact way, especially about Franklin. In watching this movie, I finally came to a conclusion. In doing all these series with you guys, all these films that we have reviewed together, these films need characters like this, because you need characters that, A, you're going to have a lot of adults here, so you're going to need younger people here, but B, these characters, they need to be hateable because you're going to want to root for them to be eaten. These movies have never been about the human characters. They've always been about the dinosaurs, so why not make them as annoying as you can? I feel like that's the series formula.
Oh, boy. Fucking millennial staffers, man. I swear.
By 50-year-old people who don't know how millennials talk.
Yes.
Justice Smith as Franklin plays the same character every movie he does. Jesus. And then Daniela Pineda, or I'm sorry, I think I have her written down as not Ali Wong, who you tried to get into this film because you wanted someone... They had no idea what to do with her. She's hot. She's a scientist. She's going to go around with no bra, but she's strong, but she's independent. But we want to have somebody here as eye candy. This is fucking... I enjoyed this movie. And then as soon as we get here and meet these two, put me on the island because I'm willing to sit in front of an active volcano.
I have never hated a character in this franchise as much as I hate Franklin. Nothing he says is funny. All of his reactions are so overdone, which is hard to do considering they're fighting dinosaurs. Or engaging with dinosaurs throughout this movie. And in her case, just because she's a vet means that she knows how to perform surgery on dinosaurs, as we will find out in this movie. Apparently it's as easy as changing a flat tire on your car.
They're watching a broadcast where the government won't get involved, and the conclusion is made that the dinosaurs will die if they're not helped. Claire then gets a call from the Lockwood Estate, an estate we've never heard of before. Trevorrow explained this by saying, "We knew that Hammond had that park built, but it has been said in the book that he had a lot of help. So it is viable that this could happen where he has the money backing of James Cromwell's character here. But why have we not met these people before? Why are we just now being introduced to them? It's stupid."
The problem is also Trevorrow and Connolly are such brain dead morons that they didn't include the reasoning in the movie and had to explain all the shit in tweets.
Yep.
Because the timeline, as we find out, does not fucking make sense.
None.
Oh, boy. This. Sure. I mean, because you killed off your character, so you got to bring. Sure. You got a second park. Why not? So you got a second benefactor. Why not? I guess the other option would have been bring somebody in that just got their settlement from InGen. I don't know. The house that he lives in looks like Hammond's house. Did they try to replace him with Hammond, then go, "No, we can't do that. He can't be Hammond. Okay, change the name real quick." Because this house... Oh, fuck. I'll get to the house later.
I did like seeing Charlie Chaplin's daughter here. She makes an appearance in all of Bayona's films, so it was good seeing that little bit of continuity there. But the bars of the first score ring at a picture of John Hammond, so we know what they're going for here, right, Matt?
Do we? Because I don't even think these filmmakers know what they're doing with this. This is a... It's sound and logic as far as, well, Hammond couldn't have done this alone. That's a leap, but I will go with it. The problem is that this has never been inferred or brought up, and they try to contrive a reason for why he's never been mentioned that breaks the timeline of this entire series. Not that this franchise is preoccupied with that, with continuity per se, but by including it, you make it 10 times worse by trying to explain it and then having to repurpose it in tweets because you forgot to include it in the movie.
And I wonder if this Eli Mills character will become a villain later. I'm not sure, guys.
Dude fucking walks down the stairs twisting a mustache. Ugh.
I was just going to say, the only way this would have been more obvious is if he had a mustache to twirl.
I believe that if they hadn't gotten Chris Pratt back, this would have been the character to go along with Claire to do what she's going to do in this film. But it becomes obvious as soon as he comes down those stairs, as you mentioned, Adam, we know exactly where this character is going to go. Eli gives a history of Hammond and Lockwood building a lab together and pulling from the amber. He says that they have a piece of land protected by barriers, and here comes James Cromwell to say that there won't be cages or tourists, and in John's words, these creatures don't need our protection, they need our absence.
Which makes no sense because he made a theme park designed exclusively for profit and for us to be involved with dinosaurs.
So stupid.
This movie does not understand John Hammond whatsoever. Like, they are clearly confused as to, it's like one writer read the book, not see the movie, and the other person has only seen the movie and is not aware of the book's existence.
Problem is they, I feel like they want to get away from Jurassic Park as quick as they can. And they're just like, okay, we need to tie into this. How quick can we get away from what this film series actually is? And fucking that's what this is about. I'm not happy with it.
Lockwood says that they tried to run before they walked, and it tore the relationship between him and Hammond apart. Lockwood is then taken away to take his medicines and leaves Claire to Eli. Eli tells her that his daughter died and he has a grandchild. When I say he, that's Lockwood, the James Cromwell character. He sends her to save 11 species, and time is against them.
Okay, this movie is a cacophony of stupidity, but one of the lines that made me laugh tremendously hard to the point where my side hurt was when he calls Blue the second smartest creature on Earth. These velociraptors apparently will be leading NASA if we bring them back.
He then says that Blue is the last of her kind and is essential to save, which brings in the service of good old Owen, who seems content on building his sanctuary.
Well, also, these writers don't understand the movie they just made because Claire and Owen now have opposite personalities of what they did in the first movie.
Yes.
She is now fully advocating for the dinosaurs when she viewed them as just assets, and now he is totally content with letting them die.
Complete opposites. Claire offers to buy Owen a beer and is losing it at a bar as they go over their breakup. Hell, honey, I wouldn't want to live in a van as well. This guy is content to be like the Chris Farley character in Saturday Night Live and just live in a van down by the river. I wouldn't want to do it either.
I feel like that's why they wrote this screenplay.
Yeah, right.
I feel like Anna Faris wrote this part, though, and explained why they broke up.
Ooh, ow.
I mean, come on.
Owen asks Claire who she's dating now, and then he tells her that Lockwood's flunky called him as well. She then says that Blue is alive, and this is what convinces him? No.
Yeah, this is like when Luke sees R2-D2 in The Last Jedi.
No, it's watching videos of him taming the creatures. For Christ's sake. Like, he's against it, and then he's watching videos, and he's like, oh, yeah, I'll go ahead and go.
No, it's like when Luke watches the recording of Leia in Last Jedi, and he's like, okay, fine.
They get to a plane that is not much bigger than a drone, and of course, Zia and Franklin come as well.
Why are you bringing these two?
Because she's a vet. Meanwhile, the grandchild, Macy, is protesting against taking a bath, and her granddad tells her that she can be a mirror image of her mom. Oh my god.
All right, so I did not see this coming as far as what they were going to reveal. But having said that, I still can't believe they went this direction Jurassic Park movie.
Meanwhile, Owen and Claire, they arrive and are greeted by Buffalo Bill himself, a guy who we seem determined to review his entire resume, Lee, played by Ted Levine.
Who is basically the Pete Postlewaite character. Like, this movie, the first half is a remake of The Lost World, right down to the archetypes of the characters.
Yep.
They enter the cages as Franklin sprays himself with bug spray and Zia says the T-Rex should be dead by now. They go further and stop as Franklin asks if it's the T-Rex that's outside. They're told that the area is not secured as they're greeted by a Brachiosaurus, and of course everyone is looking up. We get the ooh-ah moment that we see in all these movies, and Zia says that she never thought she'd see one in real life.
Which but makes no sense because we know they exist. It's what her job is.
And the last movie was all about people being bored of dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. Again, he's not directing, but Trevorrow's co-writing this movie, and he has no grasp of the movie he just made. Like, this is a Todd Phillips situation all over again.
This feels like there was just something lost in translation here. From page to screen, and Bayona is shooting what he can, and he's shooting it fine, but I am seeing characters that I don't recognize, and none of this is making any bit of fucking sense. They go to where the smoke is and find some transmitters. Claire tells Owen to be careful, and he tells her that if he doesn't get back, just know that she's the one that brought him. And all the charm of Chris Pratt is just gone at this point. I don't care about this character at all.
He does not. I don't think he wants to be here.
I don't either.
As much as I like that line, I don't think he wants to be in the rest of this film. I don't think she does either, though. Like, I think both of them are like, what the hell is this?
They examine some tracks as Owen goes in a bit deeper. I did like the mirror shot. I thought that was okay.
Mm-hmm.
Owen then finds Blue, who's not happy to see him. He offers her up some meat, and Blue looks like my old cat when he's mad. I hate this move that he does. Like, is this Crocodile Dundee? He just kind of raises his hand and calms them down. We see this how many fucking times?
Too many. Oh,
this franchise thinks you can do that with any dinosaur in these movies. If you just put your hand up, they'll calm down. I want to see a lion tamer try to do that in a zoo.
Owen calms Blue down, saying that she knows him. As she shot and then knocks him down with her tail. He goes after the soldier that shot her as Zia pulls out a dart and says that if she doesn't treat Blue, she'll never make it back to camp.
Yeah, again, lost in translation where this strike team is working for Mills. And he's made it abundantly clear to Claire, and by extension, I'm sure he told this to Wheatley, we need Blue alive, but these idiots still shoot her after he has calmed her down.
There's no reason to have live ammunition. So this, whatever. It's a reason for something that you wrote later on in the film that you seems like you had to back up and create a reason for.
We have some volcanic action. And I must say, we've been tearing this fucking film a new one, but this stuff might be my favorite stuff in the movie. I love these fireballs. I think all this stuff, even with Owen like on the ground, and I do like the lava stuff in this movie.
Okay, I think the island setup is fascinating. I think it looks pretty cool. Logistically, I'm too smart to be enjoyed this because the dinosaurs all seem to run at the same frickin' speed, whether it's the size of a chicken or the size of frickin' Godzilla, but they all run at the same speed, which makes no frickin' sense. And that speed is the same speed that our frickin' main characters run. And then when stuff's blown up and we get into the ball again, I'm just, it gets dumber and dumber as it goes.
Boy, is that line a mission statement of this movie. my issue is the... Also, the dinosaurs are all at the exact same spot on this giant fucking island.
Yes.
But yet they all run at the same time. There's a gyrosphere that's just been sitting there that still works, no problem. I guess it's powered by the same thing that the Jeeps from the first movie were running off of, because they jump-started that pretty goddamn quickly. This gag with him in the lava, that's a Star-Lord gag.
Yeah.
Him being tranquilized and trying to, like, do what Leo did in Wolf of Wall Street with the car. Look, this movie is dumber than a bag of hammers.
Eli yells at Maisie and tells her to wait by the library. Meanwhile, Triceratops comes to lick Owen's face clean and wake him up as she's surrounded by lava. And I did like him trying to pull himself to safety as the dinosaur bones just kind of roll past him in this lava.
That's a freaking, that's a gag from one of the Guardians movies almost.
I haven't seen them, so I don't know.
But also they go into, Claire and Franklin go into like the engine room, so to speak. And the team has already hacked it. Oh my God, I hate everything on this island. I'm sitting there in the theater, like utterly detesting this movie.
A raptor approaches Claire and Franklin, who gives her a chair so they can climb up. But of course he falls right within the raptor's reach. So he keeps climbing until they finally close him off. And another explosion happens with lava fireballs.
I get that in this, they're trying to bring a horror element to it, and they're trying to tease that stalking horror moment later on. But these dinos don't seem too nonplussed about the island blowing up. So the fact that it would be stalking them here in this room, I don't get it. It's not a bad sequence, but I don't know. It doesn't sit right with me.
They also feel way too domesticated for being on an island now entirely by themselves. Like, none of them seem really feral at all.
Mm-hmm.
The dinos are running, as are the humans, as trees and fire walls fall. They hide behind the gyrosphere, as you guys mentioned, as more dinosaurs run by, and then they are approached by an Allosaurus, who gets attacked by a Triceratops. Again, we come to these movies for dino-on-dino action. I find this fun.
When we get some dinosaur interaction, and especially them going at each other, yeah, it's some pretty good stuff. And it looks good, I'll give it that.
The T-Rex kills the Allosaurus and runs off.
But it's like, I got my 15 minutes.
Yeah, I'm good.
Screw you guys. And they're going home.
And get home. They continue to run and roll as lava falls, and they go right into the water. Lava falls on the...
And apparently, this is a world where everyone only knows how to run in a straight line.
Lava falls on the glass as Owen swims up and shoots the glass. Shoots the glass. He grabs a knife, which he uses to carve a hole to get them out. You guys don't like this gyrosphere on the water stuff, huh? I actually kind of like this.
I am angry at this point of watching them get freed from this freaking gyrosphere, because I don't know, watching these little drops of lava throw in, and then he shoots it, and then he's going to pull out a knife to pop the hatch. I know that somebody in a studio exec, not even giving them every 10 pages to do an action scene, they're giving him every 5, but this is, I don't know, so unnecessary.
I thought this was cool though, with the, it almost looks like one shot when they roll in the water. Mm-hmm. And the problem is they don't understand tone, because it's comical watching the dinosaurs just fall off the cliff and enter the water. It's like watching that. I don't know the name of the movie, but there's a movie where Sean Bean gets run off the side of a cliff by a herd of cattle, and it's all of them falling. It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen, but I don't think it's intended to be.
They go to a beach and find the tracker unworkable, as Claire says that it was all a lie. They see a helicopter fly with dinos in tow. So once again, guys, and you guys already mentioned it, but we are remaking Lost World here, right? This is dinos and slavery combined.
It's a remake for the first half. There's a line of demarcation where it becomes something else. I get the sense, instead of reading the Lost World, they picked up another Michael Crichton book and read Congo instead, because that's what the tone of this feels like, where it's just ridiculously stupid. You have a villain that is as over the top as Tim Curry, except without the fun accent. You have a team of mercenaries that are there. But there's no Ernie Hudson here for me to like.
What are they doing to this Stegosaurus? Like, this is...
What are they doing in this movie, period? Yeah. Like, that's my big question.
They see that Zia is also captured as lava once again approaches, as does a boat. They get on a truck that makes a speed-like jump right onto the boat. Why? They look out and just see all the dinosaurs suffer painful deaths as lava just encompasses them. And of course, the soundtrack is going to outline their calls of suffering. And of course, we see this Brachiosaurus, who Trevor Rowe has said this is the exact same Brachiosaurus from the first Jurassic Park film. So we got to see its entrance and we got to see its death.
See, the fact that you openly have to say that and then retroactively explain the movie after the fact makes me think you're a hack. Trevor's a fucking hack.
This is emotional manipulation, and it absolutely gets me. Wow. It got me in the movie theater. Like, it did its job that way. As much as I'm like, why did they run? How did nobody see them run the dot and then the boat? But then when you see the shot of it going down and you see it emotionally gets me. I'm completely manipulated by the score and the work there. But that's where my goodwill is kind of going to end. And this is my goodwill up to this point.
I was going to say, that's your only goodwill up to this point. We cut to Eli watching the happenings on this Superman 3 type screen as Gunner, played by Toby Effin Jones, shows up to ask if all the dinos were ready to be sold.
You also notice he has his hair coiffed to be
Donald Trump.
Trump-ish, and he's wearing fake teeth that are so white they might as well have been ripped from Tom Cruise's skull.
And here is when we hear of Eli's plan of weaponizing the dinos, and of course he reveals the plans to make a whole new dino called the Endoraptor.
We just did both of these in the last movie.
We've done both of these in all 5 of these films, Matt. We're following the same exact fucking formula. And by the way, so Owen, we've seen him tame these animals. He's a scientist too. He's doing research. We're basing all this off Owen's research. When did this happen? Mazzy tells Lockwood that there was a man there talking to Eli about selling the dinosaurs, and Lockwood just tells her to go to bed.
Because James Cromwell does not care in this movie. His accent goes in and out. He is horrible at this.
Yeah, he does not give a fuck. They see Blue completely tied down as Owen says, look what they've done to her. And of course, they find a T-Rex that's on board. And here we go, Matt. They get some of its blood as it opens its eyes and isn't happy. Meanwhile, we cut back to Maisie. She finds a lab, and wouldn't you know it, she also finds Owen's videos as we cut to Zia saving Blue's life with a blood transfusion from the T-Rex.
Did Orci and Kurtzman write this?
This is awful.
See, you know what's...
It's a plot point in the third act of the movie.
Like, it's where I get even more offended is there's parts of this that make me laugh a little bit. When the T-Rex moves its head to the side and Owen gets pinned to this, you know, to the side of it, and he's like, I have fun. I swear, Zia is just there to, like, not wear a bra center frame because she is as annoying as Franklin, and then just shows up to freaking bounce like a fucking Instagram reel every now and then. And it's insulting that way. But that you are going to do a blood transfusion. And to think that everybody that they brought to this island, all these goons or mercenaries or scientists or military or ingent or whatever the hell this was, nah, it's all good. These guys are just chilling here in the boat. Nothing to see here. Nobody's watching these dinos. There's no cameras. There's nothing at all.
We are once again on a boat with dinos. They don't have the balls to do anything different. We've seen all of this shit before, with the exception of the blood transfusion, which is awful.
Wait, this is the end of three.
Yeah. Maisie then hears an argument with Eli and Henry is saying how important it is to get Blue back so they can work on the new species. So Henry Wu is once again back here. B.D. Wong.
Oh, this poor bastard. He's like a real-life fossil. They keep digging him up and putting him in front of the camera. Why is he the mad scientist again?
See, to me, this is what you don't have Cromwell. That makes no sense. What you have is B.D. Wong, maybe, I don't know, his family is the other partner in all this. To me, that would be completely believable that you have a foreign government, you know, science fucking lab that's going to partially fund this. I'm down to that of why you got him here than just cuz.
We then see a dino reach for Maisie, who runs away screaming.
It's a nice shot, but yeah. I've seen a monster calls.
Eli catches up and locks her up. You know what, though? This is why you bring J.A. Bayona here, right, Matt? This is the kind of imagery he's good at.
Yeah. But here on out, it becomes this is a totally different movie than the first half.
Absolutely.
Once they leave that island, it's like they went into another franchise entirely, and it's a choice.
Franklin gets spotted and dragged away, so of course, Owen is tasked with getting him out. Owen starts the truck as Zia wakes up Blue, and then we see the T-Rex brought in some cage with a goat as Lockwood and Eli get in a conversation where Lockwood would have Eli call the police, and then Eli tells him that he's not the only guilty one here. So we then see Owen get caught. Eli talks to Claire about what the difference is between what he's doing and what he did, and that her and Owen are the parents of a new breed of dinosaur. So here's my question. Why is Claire here?
Because she was in the last film. Contractual obligation. Thing is, if you built this, if you already bioengineered and have this other dinosaur, what did we go to the island for? You have everything you need already.
We then see Maisie go outside and see people file into the Lockwood estate. She climbs down. And by the way, she's wearing the same clothes as Elliot from E.T., which I noticed in this viewing, as meetings take place over who wants what kind of dinosaur.
Oh, this auction scene is hysterical. Like, this is the most... From here on out, this thing becomes a full-blown cartoon. You got every race imaginable. You might as well have Al-Qaeda here with the amount of arms dealing that's here. You got literal auctions happening with the money on the screen. It's like Project Runway with Ann Billy's dinosaurs. This is one of the boldest choices I've seen a big franchise take as a departure. And I love it for it. And I wish this was the whole movie. As stupid as it is. Like, I would watch Jurassic Mansion, given the context, especially with comparison to how much I despise the first half.
I'm with you. Also, these dinosaurs are going for about as much as Vince McMahon paid for WCW. They're going for like $4 million. Like, that seems cheap to me. Call me crazy.
Yeah. Somewhere Eric Bischoff is going, hang on, I could buy that.
Yeah.
Do I get the library? Okay, but how do you build a fucking Bruce Wayne secret dino bat cave in the bottom of this mansion and Lockwood just doesn't know? because you have these cages. You have, it's like the freaking nest from Resident Evil. Like, this whole thing, don't even get me started on the logistics later on by the end of this film, because we're down, you know, subterranean, but these freaking semi-trucks just pull up to a dock, no problem, just load them in. This shit, oh God, this is like Cabin in the Woods, fucking, once you get underground.
Well, apparently you know the logistics of this because you have the goddamn Lego set.
Yeah, no basement. Oh, I got to hook it up to the Batcave. That would work.
Maisie then sees her grandfather dead as she grabs the book from his hand and leaves.
That'll do, pig. That'll do.
I thought of the exact same fucking thing. She then hears a conversation between Eli and Iris saying that she understands Maisie more than he does and is then asked to leave. We then see a conversation between Claire and Owen who talk about the first time they'd ever seen a dinosaur and how this is all her fault and his for showing them the way. All right, you want to talk about dumb. This scene of this dinosaur from next door helping them escape and breaking these bars, this is so stupid. Oh my God, my head was exploding from the dumbness that was falling out of the screen as I was watching it.
Oh, it doesn't stop here.
Utterly stupid, but I think this is at least some fun. And this film could use a little more fun, a little less stupid. So this thing breaking through at least made me laugh.
We cut to the auction, and we see that the Ankylosaurus is going for $10 million.
Opted Ankylosaurus.
Meanwhile, Maisie finds Owen and Claire, and she says that she does like dinosaurs. Owen convinces Maisie to come down as she tells Claire that her grandfather is now dead. We then see the Endoraptor. He's going up for sale as flashes of light cause a shadow on the wall, and Claire is told that it was designed by good old Henry Wu. But the weird thing about this Endoraptor is Henry Wu was like, no, that's not up for sale. But they see as the higher this price goes, the more he's just like, okay, yeah, go ahead, sell him.
Yeah, it's not for sale, but we still put it in a cage and showcase it to everybody.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. And we have the most advanced super weapon predator, but it only works with a laser pointer.
Yeah, what was up with that?
It's a cat. I'll say, when it's first coming out, you got the shadows on, you know, the wall. Pretty cool looking, you know, nice horror type of effect. I like that. It's classic, you know, monster movie. But all you did was make the dino we had last movie. You made it smaller and you made it black. And it's got a gold stripe. You literally made a smaller dinosaur. And just because it reacts to a freaking laser pointer, so does my cat Ladybug. Jesus.
Here's where I think the line has been drawn in that. And I'm going back to this. These movies are now more geared towards kids than ever. We kind of went away from that last week, even though we had a really nice attack scene from the pterodactyls on the assistant last week. They are now just geared towards kids. And I'm not seeing any of the horror that I love so much that was there, at least during the first Jurassic Park, at least the little bit that Spielberg showed. Matt, are you wanting this to just get more mean, more violent like I am?
No. Well, I want this to keep going here because now I'm actually interested in where it's progressing. It's stupid as all hell, don't get me wrong, but I'm kind of loving this as an exercise in can we just get away with this, which I really feel like was the bad half of this movie. It's almost like a test. It's an exercise in how far can we push this without someone saying no, and clearly that word was never uttered.
Adam, your kids love dinosaurs. Would you have liked to have seen a more adult version of this?
I'd like to see a smarter version of this. I'd like to see a more focused version of this. If this was going to be the movie, we should have got here a hell of a lot quicker, and this should be what it is. This movie is fucking B.D. Wong's creation. It is mixing and matching DNAs, and we don't know what the fuck is going to come out of that test tube. But yeah, I mean, I'd like to see that. I don't need a more adult. Like, I want it to be fun. Like, Jurassic Park is magical for everybody, and that's what a Jurassic Park movie should be. I guess trying to make it a horror movie, okay. Like, I get the thought, but that's not what Jurassic Park was. So, I don't know. Just fucking focus, and that this thing is not. It is four or five different movies in one.
Well, you hire a horror director to inject a little bit. I thought they hired Bayona to inject a little bit more fright here and more gothic imagery, which we are going to get, but not as much as I was hoping for.
Yeah, but you know what? Whatever. You get a production designer and a cinematographer and you got some gothic imagery. I mean, if you want to shoot a movie that way, shoot the movie that way. Mm-hmm. And this thing isn't preoccupied with deciding what kind of movie it wants to be.
Owen runs into the dino who broke them out as we cut to it disturbing the auction. Owen joins the fray as he gets to the Endoraptor. Wheatley also joins in as he calls for his bonus and decides to get in the cage and egg on the new dino. Yeah, that's a good idea. I do like how he gets it, though. I do like how we have this close-up of his arm getting bitten off. This is actually, I kind of like this. I wanted more of this.
Well, this is a fucking Looney Tunes cartoon because the Indoraptor plays dead. You see it open its eyes.
Yeah.
It's so stupid. And I'm laughing both with the movie and at it.
Agreed. I'm laughing at it because I can't believe how absurd it is. At the same time, and I want to slap myself for it, it makes me laugh. Because I can't believe how absurd it's being. But it makes me chuckle, and you kind of need that break at this moment after this, you know, I don't even want to call it action, but whatever this is for the last 10 minutes or so.
Gunner tries running for it, thinks he got away in the elevator, but this isn't Mad Men, as the elevator is not a safe place here, and he gets it too. Owen, Claire, and Maisie are stopped by Eli, who says that you can't go back in time to stop it. He then says they have no idea who she is, as she never had a grandchild. He wanted his daughter back, so he made her again. And this clone is what drove John Hammond away. What the fuck?
Okay. The biggest problem, if I'm looking at this on principle, is that the timeline makes no sense. Macy is supposed to be, I'm going to guess, 12 at the oldest. Is that a fair ballpark?
Yeah.
We're told that Lockwood's daughter visited the park, meaning Jurassic Park, which is well past 12 years prior. So unless she is a clone that ages slower, like the opposite of Boba Fett, that's the only way this makes sense. As it stands, like the fact that Trevorrow had to retroactively like add more to explain this, oh my god, this is so bad. Like, but it's also hysterical that I'm like, okay, we've introduced human cloning into Jurassic Park. They went there. That is jumping the Mosasaur. But I threw up my hands at this point saying, I give up. These movies have stopped trying, and I'm just going to watch this like a raccoon staring at a trash can.
Well, here's the thing. You said the same exact thing last week, but you were having more fun last week, right?
Well, I think I'm having more fun with the second half of this movie than I did with all of Jurassic World.
Interesting.
The problem is I had to sit through the first half, which really tampers my overall perspective on this movie.
I can't stand this. Does it make sense in that Jurassic Park has been about cloning dinosaurs and all that entails, good and bad? Yes. But watching this in the theater for the first time, I remember going, huh? And watching this for the second time, still going, huh? And there's not a time that I'm not going to watch this that's not going to be my response. I mean, you really got to stretch and pay attention to figure out how it even makes sense whatsoever. And at the end of the day, it still doesn't make sense from a screenwriting standpoint. This is just a shit decision.
We see Eli get it. This is kind of goofy fun. As we go back to the lab, as Henry Wu is overseeing more samples and requesting raptor samples. Franklin stops Wu in his tracks as they're blocked by guards, but Blue comes into the picture and saves them as they run. She then scampers away as the lab blows up. Claire, Owen, and Maisie, they get outside and hide as they're being hunted. They run as they're being chased, and the dino actually starts sniffing like a dog, which was bizarre. And then we get the haunted house stuff, Matt, that you were talking about. How much are you liking this?
Oh, I like this a lot because Bayona is doing a lot with the lighting and shadow. And this dinosaur actually feels like a threat, especially since they don't, I mean, Owen has a gun, but what good is that going to do against this thing? So I'm liking this, but I also feel like I've watched 8 different movies in one, but it took me too long to get to the stuff I'm enjoying.
And Adam, you're hating everything in this house, aren't you?
You can't win me back at this point.
No.
If this was the movie, I think I would enjoy it. But this isn't the movie. This is you deciding to pivot into something else to close your movie. And I'm not okay with that. This is like a completely different group of people making a different movie, and it just got edited in here at the end.
We then see cyanide get turned on as Franklin turns on the power, and everyone's out in the open as Macy screams, and a dino is deflected right back at her. So the chase is on. The Endoraptor chases Maisie through a hall and has a light shined on it as Claire kisses Owen. Okay.
The size of this dinosaur changes from room to room, from hallway to hallway, as to how big it fills up a space. And this thing can crush through walls, but a freaking dumbwaiter is strong enough to keep it from breaking through.
I was wondering if someone else caught that.
Oh, yeah, this thing changes sizes like Carrie Fisher in A New Hope.
Jesus Christ. Owen grabs a gun as Maisie runs upstairs, and we cut to the roof where the Endoraptor lurks. Maisie's in bed as the Endoraptor crawls on the rainy roof. It enters her room and taps the floor with its feet. It then lurks over her, and she screams just as Owen walks in and fights it off. Someone was
laughing. This is okay, I'm laughing because this is how we show that these dinosaurs are going to be teaching paleontology in a matter of weeks. It feels the glass breaking under its feet, and it moves. Wow, this thing should be a member of MEDSA.
And I do think that this is what Bayona wanted to make.
I agree.
Because, look, the shots, when there's the reflection in the glass, one, this is a house and a museum and a storage facility. Remember that, because this thing's got freaking more layers than Shrek. But that entire, they're going through what looks like the Natural freaking History Museum of San Diego. That reflection, and then the lights kick on, amazing. The shadows at play, the lights at play, the single claw going through like it's a 90s, late 80s, 90s monster movie are fucking great. It is just so disjointed. It's a little crazy.
Yeah.
I think they saw Bayona when they pitched this movie to him. They only gave him the second half of the script.
Yeah, Bayona, he was a protege of Guillermo del Toro, and I definitely see a lot of that influence in the second half. I'm with Matt. I'm having fun with it, but you have to go through so much sludge to get here. The Endoraptor backs Owen against a wall until good old Blue shows up and the fight is on. They slide down the roof and then climb up as the Endo is on their tails. It climbs on a glass fixture as Maisie falls, and Claire somehow is creating a distraction as she bangs the roof and holds the gun with the laser sighting that we saw earlier. She sends the signal and it almost falls before climbing itself back up. It looks at Owen and it makes its move as Blue jumps and they fall. But it's Endo who lands on a spike and Blue runs off.
Nowhere, Blue with the RKO! RKO!
Out of nowhere.
The second I saw that frickin' skull, the first time we walked through the house, I'm like, something's getting impaled on that by the end of the film. It was so frickin'... goddamn. Pac Bell couldn't have telegraphed that as much.
Adam, stop patting yourself on the back, dude. That was easy to see.
Yeah, I mean, Helen Keller could have seen that coming.
Zia says that they have a problem, so they can't celebrate just yet.
Then yes, Zia and Franklin, they're the problem.
They walk in a lab and see that all the dinosaurs within are dying. Owen tells Claire to be careful as they're not on an island. She unlocks all the doors, and the dinos are now in the cyanide room. Owen says that if she presses that button to help them escape, there's no going back. She closes...
Oh my God.
Let me get to it. She closes the button without pressing it, and all the dinos are sitting here suffering. But it's Maisie, who, because she's a clone, is like, they're like me, and she lets them out. What the fuck is this, guys?
This... I was laughing like Robert De Niro in Cape Fear in the theater. Her delivery, the way that they're expecting us to take this seriously, like this is supposed to be the mission statement of the movie, and oh my God, it's so... I watched this, like, I paused the movie, rewind it, and watched this delivery like 5 times because it makes me laugh every single time. If I had coffee in my mouth, I would have spat it across the room like a Dilophosaurus.
And you know what, I hate to do this, but we always say that we hate knocking child actors, but this girl won this role after they auditioned something like 2,000 to 3,000 girls for this role. She is not good. She does not react well to anything in front of her. In fact, sometimes she's even looking off to the side and not directly at the effect. She's just not good, and it doesn't help. But at the same time, she's not written that well.
I mean, how can you deliver that line with a straight face?
Well, I'm saying throughout the entire film, though. Not just this.
Well, I thought the thing, like when she yells at the beginning to scare Charlie Chaplin's daughter, I thought the twist was going to be she's part raptor.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Like, I mean, this movie is so dumb that that might as well be included.
Yeah, they have cloning.
They're like, well, we're trying, much like dinosaurs, where they had to use, like, frog DNA and shit to put the missing DNA strands in. Human cloning, we need dinosaur pieces to fix that. So.
Okay. One, dumb, horrible performance. I don't know if I want to blame her or the fact that Bayona maybe can't direct a child actor very well. I'm going to say, though, at the end of the day, I like the choice that's made, because I agree that once you make that choice, you can't go back. So I do think it's a little ballsy from a franchise standpoint to say, we are actually going to release him into the world, and now the next movie has got to deal with that. So I like that as a choice, and I was impressed that they went that way.
We see Eli head to his car as steps approach and the dinos stampede him as he hides. He crawls out and is then eaten by the T-Rex. Blue then approaches. He tells her that they'll take her to a safe place as she leaves. We then focus on Maisie as Malcolm pontificates about how power has been released. We see Owen, Maisie, and Claire leave in a car as dinosaurs are making their presence known.
I couldn't believe they're trying to play this with the sincerity of the end of Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
This entire end is in the trailer. Every shot that's here, the Mosasaurus up, you know, where the people are surfing, his speech, it kind of drives me nuts unless it's a big surprise, but this was the trailer and it's how the movie ends.
Malcolm says, "Welcome to Jurassic World," as we end on Blue calling from the top of a mountain, and credits roll on Fallen Kingdom to a scene, you guys didn't think I would stick through, but I did, of dinosaurs attacking Las Vegas, a place that could not use another attack.
Hey, don't talk about the elderly that way.
Yeah, there's that post-credit scene. You didn't see it?
Whoops. My turn.
No, I'm normally good about post-credit scenes.
Oh my God, guys. I watched a post-credit scene that you guys haven't seen. It's not anything. It's literally dinos just roaming around. It's an overhead shot of dinos in the air roaming around Vegas.
So are there like raptors on the sidewalk?
Yeah. Well, no, not on the side.
Hiking,
no.
Hiking their skirts up.
fuck it. Credits roll on Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. Boys, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do we hate Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom? Adam, go ahead.
I don't know of a departure so far from the film before it or franchise before it as this one. I think I understand what the studio wanted to make. I think I understand what the director wanted to make. And I think I understand what the screenwriter wanted to make. And the problem is all three of them tried to make a film. And all three of them did make a film, and it's not one cohesive part. I think it starts off pretty well. The pre-credit part of this film is fucking great. Like, that thing is, it sets a tone, and the rest of this film doesn't follow that tone. The end of this film is something completely different. It's a freaking dinosaurs loose in a monster house. Great idea. But then you have the entire middle, like 80%, 75% that doesn't do the job of connecting those parts. And that's where this movie falls. The acting, not very good, not very engaging. The writing is poor. The characters are insufferable. And even the parts that should be exciting, the dinos themselves, aren't very. They change size. For some reason, dinos the size of size of buildings and dinos the size of a cat are all in the same size cages in the basement of a house whose owner didn't know that he had a basement. But whatever. This thing should have been written better, should have been directed more cohesive, and your actors should have wanted to be there instead of just being told that they were under contract for the next film. God, that makes me worry about next week. I enjoyed watching this with my kids in the theater because they liked seeing dinosaurs. But I can remember walking to the car and having them look at me and go, "Dad, that wasn't very good, was it?" And me going, no, it really wasn't. And rewatching this since, I can still agree. This is not a good film. It's not a good Jurassic Park film. And it's not even just a good summer blockbuster. I can't believe this thing made $1 billion, but so did Iron Man 3. So, you know, nothing for taste. Preview. So I'm going to give this a classic 4 on 10. I've seen it again for this. And I don't think I can think of a time where I'm going to watch Fallen Kingdom once again. 4 on 10.
Patented 4 from Mr. Bunch. Goudreau, go ahead, sir.
I'm really stuck between a rock and a hard place because I don't recall the last movie we've reviewed where I utterly despise one portion of it. And it's almost a split down the middle. And unabashedly love the second half for being beautiful garbage. Because that's how I feel about the moment they get to that house. Honestly, the second half of this movie is my favorite portion of any of these Jurassic Park movies, and I include the first one. But also remember, I don't love the first one, and I also think it's dumber than people want to admit. It's a elegant creature feature that just has an auteur at the helm. The science is kind of questionable, but I don't think in totality it was worth the first 45 minutes of remaking an already bad movie that was made out of financial stewardship on the part of Spielberg with The Lost World, and you do it worse. I didn't think that was possible. And I don't think any of us like The Lost World. But I think the second half of this is better than anything the second one did with going to San Diego. I mean, it does it for a longer portion. But goddamn, I'm at a loss for words. I was at a loss for words leaving that theater I felt like I was in the lost world of my consciousness trying to process what I had seen. It's one of the most unique blockbusters we've had, certainly in the last decade. I can't believe this thing made $1 billion. Well, I guess not, given the track record of this series, but it's the least Jurassic Park of all of these. But I also appreciate just the sheer stupidity. I mean, this thing, I'm going to use an insensitive word, but Tropic Thunder kind of made it famous. This movie goes full retard. And I want to compliment it for doing so, but I don't think the juice was worth the squeeze having to get through the first half. So I don't know what the hell to score this movie. Enjoyment has to weigh out for me, so I'm going to... Fuck it, I'm going to give it a 6. Like,
wow.
I'm not going to watch this in totality, but I have such dumb fun with the second half that it kind of... If it was the opposite, or if I loved the first half and hated the second half, I think that would tip the scales the other way. But I think the movie, the fact that it ends on a better note, quote-unquote, as dumb as it is than the movie starts out on, has to weigh into my decision on that. So... begrudging 6 out of 10, but this is I'm not gonna mince words, this movie's fucking stupid. You can put that on the poster. I think the tagline is the park is gone is the tagline. The brain thoroughly left when the park closed too.
The most qualified 6 I think I've ever heard given on this podcast. Oh my god, this movie is written by people who have no idea of the film that they made last week. I came out of last week's film after rewatching it, liking it way more than I initially did. When I initially reviewed this one, I think I gave it a pretty decent score. And rewatching it, my head was spinning, guys, from how dumb this movie was. It was so bad. And it's being directed with an authenticity that instead of embracing how bad it was expecting us to take it serious. Now, I will say, I do like the gothic imagery of this. I really do. I like the way that this Endoraptor is chasing this little girl around the mansion. But as I mentioned, this little girl is an awful actress, and I just did not feel for her. I thought maybe the fact that she was a clone would qualify either Bayona or Spielberg to go ahead and kill her, which they don't. Because we are once again wrestling with, do we make this scary? Do we make this for kids? The movie made over $1 billion. Of course they're not going to. They want to go after their audience. And their audience are people like Adam's kids at the time who were young enough. If you're that young, you will be scared by this. I seriously believe that. I think it's a good entranceway. However, if you're adults like us and you're watching this and you watch that 1993 film when it was initially released, the potential of taking it to a better place was there, and they don't do it, which makes me scared for next week's film. I have not seen next week's film. I have no idea where they go, except for the fact that we are bringing back characters that we've seen before. However, my final score for this is the same exact score as Adam. I'm giving this a 4. I do like the stuff in the house, and even the auction has its moments, but I was bored to shit watching this movie. I shouldn't say bored. I was just shaking my head at every decision that was made here. But at one point, I was like, Matt, I was like, fuck it. Just throw it at me. Go ahead. And it made itself even more dumb. So 4 out of 10 from me on Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. As I mentioned, I have not seen next week's film. I do know that Colin Trevorrow comes back. I do know that Laura Dern and Sam Neill and Jeff Goldblum come back. And, of course, Blair and Owen, Bryce Dallas Howard, and Chris Pratt also come back. I don't know how the screen is going to be shared by all of those characters. You are already going overboard with the characters that were in this film. I don't know. I have no idea. Matt, as somebody who has seen this, what are you expecting when we review Jurassic World Dominion next week?
I don't remember this being a pleasurable theatrical experience, so I'm kind of dreading rewatching this. I don't have nice things to say about Colin Trevorrow and him going back in the director's chair. Wow, he gets booted off the ending of Star Wars, but he gets to end Jurassic World. I don't feel like that's a good consummation if I was him.
Is he on Rebirth? I know he's not directing it, but is he a producer?
I'm sure he's an executive producer. Okay. Like, wrong.
By name only.
But I also know, because David Koepp is the only credited screenwriter on Rebirth.
Okay. All right. Adam, A, have you seen next week's film? B, what are you expecting when we talk about it?
I did see it. I've not seen it since. I remember defending it enough against some people who were upset. I also remember being quite excited that you were getting returning cast members, because Laura Dern is one that I always like to watch, and I figured that if they were getting her, if they were getting Grant back, that they would come back only if there was a reason to. So I was excited, that reason being more than just a paycheck. So I was excited. The runtime gave me pause, but I remember being quite excited for this, but I haven't seen it since, so we'll see.
All right. And after next week's film, we are going to cap the series off with a review of Jurassic World Rebirth, and we'll reveal what our next series is going to be. But until next week, when we get to Jurassic World Dominion, do you guys remember the first time you heard a podcast? The first time you hear them, it's like a miracle. Thank you, boys.
It's the T-Rex. It's the T-Rex. It's the T-Rex. Claire, it's the T-Rex. It's the T-Rex. It's the T-Rex.
Stop! It's not the T-Rex. Probably.
Probably?
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively here on Percolated Media.
The titanosaur herd should be right across this valley.
Well, they're herbivores, right?
Yeah.
That's good.
But the things that hunt them aren't.
Come back every Friday as new retrospective reviews are posted weekly on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
Something's wrong. They're communicating.
Please visit and check out our Percolated Media Facebook page to get an advanced look at what the boys will be reviewing that week, as well as other things such as Matt and Garrett's wrestling podcast, what the site has in store for the future, some periodically done written reviews, and so much more.
That is one big pile of shit.
Check out the Percolated Media archives, as we have tons of franchise reviews, including the films of the DC Universe featuring Batman and Superman, the Planet of the Apes franchise, Star Wars,
the ongoing Marvel series, the Alien franchise,
the Mad Max movies, Avatar,
the Mission Impossible film series,
and so many more.
I have no expense.
A Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett and Matt.
You recording this thing?
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
Mr. Work here didn't tell us everything that we need to know.
Scheduling done by Matt.
Let's face it, in your particular field, you're the top minds.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam.
Good job. You're making this look totally normal.
This podcast is not affiliated with any film studio or network, and all opinions expressed on the Three Men and a Retrospective podcast represents the opinions of that individual. Any similarities to any and all things associated with the films in question are strictly coincidental.
Kids okay?
I didn't ask. Why wouldn't they be?
Kids get scared.
What's to be scared about? Just a little hiccup in the power.
Sorry, I didn't say I was scared.
I didn't say you were scared.
I know.
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is an independently produced podcast, and it's thanks to the support of listeners like you that help keep it that way. Please like and subscribe, as well as leave a review on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
Nice shot.
Nice rocket.
This podcast is a Percolated Media production. Copyright 2025, and any and all sound and audio clips are used for entertainment purposes only.
I
What if we get the samples and we don't give them over to a company that makes a life-saving drug and then prices it so 99% of the planet can't afford it? Science is for all of us, not some of us. Have you thought about that?
Well, I guess I haven't.
Well, then maybe you should start.
Maybe you should stop.
That's it.
This fucking movie crossed a billion too?
Yeah, all three of these crossed a billion.
No, Dominion did not.
Holy shit, really? I had no idea.
I thought it did. Okay.
Dominion made... Oh, it did. No shit.
Wow.
I thought it didn't because of the pandemic still. That's why I was...
All right, Matt. What are you laughing at? What are you laughing
at? This fucking movie. 3, 2, 1.
Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom.
You know, I heard of a Monster's Call.